right. You want to do the intro there, James?
Worms. Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends Variety Hour, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Studios in the corner of Trash View and Nada Vista. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. Put on your 3D glasses now. We warm your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep the sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it, Michael?
It is working, and I do feel it.
Can you feel it, Imaginary Braden?
Imaginary Braden. He lost some fiends points, man. I'll tell you that. Not being here.
It's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows use and reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Nice. And that's an app called Pocket Alibi that we made that has all its little soundboard with all sorts of things you can say. And it's free on Google App Store, Google Play, and you can get it. It's called Pocket Alibi, and I recommend you get it. And I also recommend if you get it, you you review it, because I'm going to start saying this every show, because we have way more downloads of all of our apps than, like, by a power of 20 than have reviewed them. And, you know, same thing with the Freedom Fiends on the iTunes store. I mean, we got, I don't know, 30 or 40 reviews on there, but we have, you know, about 1,000 downloads of each show, and gosh knows who many listening on the radio, and I'm guessing about 3,000 to 5,000 a night. So if you like the Freedom, if you don't like the Freedom Fiends, write a review. I would like to see more reviews, you know. I'm not one of these Molinites who says, if you don't give me a donation, you're stealing. But I will say, if you're listening and you're not giving a donation, I'd really appreciate it if you at least take the time, the 2 minutes, to go write a review, and that doesn't cost you anything. And it actually, I think it improves your, I think when you write reviews of things, you're doing your, I don't know if I'm going to say libertarian duty, but I'll say this, that if you think that there should be less government in the world, I think that you're replacing some of the few things governments claim to do when you go and write reviews on things. Because, you know, people say, well, how would consumers be protected without the government? Well, by, like, you know, eBay comment system and Amazon rating system and things like that. So what do you think, James? You like that plan?
Yeah, I like that plan. Review the app.
Yeah. And my book, User's Manual for the Human Experience. And you got any books? You got anything you want to pimp out there, James?
No, I don't have anything that needs reviewed right now.
Okay. When you do, let us know. Because that is one of the perks of the Fiends, too, is that, you know, we'll give you free radio time if you have a project you want to pump. And, you know, we'll give you free ads to people that won't buy your product and won't review it. that'll download your free product or service and not review it. So there you go. But I would almost say that you're not a very good libertarian if you never write reviews. I think it's an important part of participating in the market. I'll even go that far.
I've actually had a review I've written for a very terrible book used as an advertisement for that book before.
What was the book, and what was your statement?
I really don't want to plug the book because it was so terrible.
Okay. What did you say about it?
I said it was one of the worst books that I've read, that you'd get a better understanding of libertarian theory by skimming Wikipedia.
Oh, and, is it written by someone with three names, possibly? Does the author have three names?
The author might have three names.
One of them's a girl's name, huh?
It might be. I can't remember who the author is off the top of my head.
Yeah, I know. But so he used it where? On he like used the back it on, of the book flap?
No, he used it on his Facebook, the Facebook page for the book, my quote. Okay. And as the advertisement for their book, to be like, look, is that James Weeks disagrees with it, so that means it's good.
It must be good. Did you read the ebook of that book? The ebook is horribly laid out, isn't it?
No,
it's the paperback of that book is horribly laid out. Like it's all over the place, and there's like big gaps of like half pages that are blank for no reason in the middle of a sentence. And
no, it was a paperback.
The margins are bad, and yeah, whoever did that, you know, it's funny. I find that amusing that someone who claims to be an expert in the free market would be really bad at putting together a physically quality product. They're kind of not really walking their talk, you know, I would say, of the person we're not going to name.
Yeah, it's a terrible book. But
yeah.
No, the guy didn't have, this was a different book. I think we're thinking of different books because they're not three names. It's written by two authors.
Oh, not I'm talking about Christopher Chase Rachels. I'll say it right now.
That book is also terrible.
Yeah, but that's the book that has really bad page layout that, you know, like, you don't get away anymore with publishing stuff yourself and say, well, it's not quality. I didn't have a major publisher because anybody can do that stuff. I put out a book in the year 2000 that I self-published by going to a printer and paying $4,000 to have it printed and bound 1,000 copies. And I got a stolen copy of Quark. Pirated copy of Quark and used it, not stolen, pirated copy of Quark, learned page layout myself, did out the page layout on the book, and it looks fabulous. It looks like, you know, quote unquote, a real book or from a major publisher. So you don't have an excuse, Christopher Chase Rachels, with a girl name. No, you'll have to tell me during the break who you're talking about. You know, the first instance I ever saw of a book using a bad comment as a selling point was in the early 70s, and it was on the Abbie Hoffman book, Steal This Book. Did you ever see that? You seem like someone who would have read that book, have you?
I have not read that book.
Really?
No. That I have listened me to the Steal This album from System of a Down, but not Steal It, Steal This Book.
Nothing like that, no. Steal This Book was the first thing that taught me to distrust the government, and I recommend reading it from a historical standpoint. It will get you on a government list if you order it from Amazon, and it does advocate violence and communism, and I'm not a fan of either of those things, but, you know, I mean, it was written by Abbie Hoffman, and he was friends with and fans of the people that were, like, you know, blowing up buildings in the 60s, blowing up, you know, mostly, like, draft places, parts of the war machine, and I don't know. I don't think that's really the way to get things done. But, you know, it's a book that tells people how to make bombs and tells them how to use guns and tells them to mix DMSO and LSD and, you know, because DMSO, like, soaks drugs mixed with it into your body, and he says to put it on the door handles of police cars, and it's got all sorts of things in it like that. But beyond all that, it's the book that taught me to distrust the government. I stole it. It's probably the last thing I stole. I stole it when I was 10 from my friend whose brother had stolen it from someone else. Like, this book was a bestseller, but you couldn't buy it in stores because no bookstore would keep it because it says on the cover, "Steal this book," and people did. But on the back cover of this book, it said, it had a blurb. It first of all, it listed, like, the 29 publishers that turned it down. And then it had a quote from one of them. It was someone huge, like Simon & Schuster. And it was, like, you know, Vice President Simon & Schuster and the name. And it said that he said, "This book will end free speech as we know it." That's a really killer negative review to have on the back of your book, I think.
This is. But, no, the yeah, this is, I actually pulled up the review. It's actually funny because it's like the second to last Facebook post they have still to this day of like, they don't, these people are not very good at advertising.
Hey, but they can write about the free market if they're, you know, paraphrasing someone else, I'm sure.
Well, they couldn't even do that. They couldn't even do that.
They couldn't adequately paraphrase other writers.
No, it was so bad. But no, their comment was, "Mr. Weeks believes that this is an appropriate form of behavior," and it has a picture of me stripping on C-SPAN.
Man, and then it has a minutes of fame.
Yeah, and then it says, "We disavow Mr. Weeks and his method. It has no place in our view of the spectrum of libertarianism. We are comforted to know that he does not align with our political views."
Wow. Is this a Libertarian Party book by chance?
It's even worse than Libertarian Party book. This is like, wow, someone who thinks the Libertarian Party is not status enough.
Okay,
who wrote
email me the link. I want to see this. Mm. Yeah, you know, in the next segment, I'm going to tell the world how to solve the problem of lithium batteries that won't blow up but provide a lot of power for a long time. I figured it out today, and I'm going to issue the first ever BIP patent, the first ever BIPCOT no government patent, which is going to allow use and reuse by anyone except governments, government agents, and people that do work for the government, which means that anybody can use this free, but Tesla is going to have to pay me because they're cozy with the government. But the name of this episode is going to be Elon Musk, Here's How to Make Better Batteries. So, or something like that. And I'm going to, you know, tag him on it.
Allegedly.
So, allegedly, yeah. I actually came up with another use of the BIPCOT No Government License recently. So the book that I just put out, the Kindle version of User's Manual for Human Experience, does not have an ISBN number, but it does have a BBIN, which is a BIPCOT Book Identification Number. It's a new system I've created that has, so far, unique numbers, because I've only used it for that book and then the paperback of that book and then the Kindle and paperback of Diary of an S&M Romance, the new version, which is a book that I can't admit I wrote, but it was written by someone named Thorn Daddy and his sex slave slash wife, Dalai Lama, D-O-L-L-I-E-L-L-A-M-A, and that's on Amazon, and that also has BBINs, BIPCOT Book Identification Numbers, and the first four, which are 00, it's 13 zeros, 12 zeros followed by a 1, and then a 2, and then a 3, and a 4. So 1 through 4 have been used, and I mean, I guess I can't really, like, make people not duplicate numbers. So I guess people could, you know, I'm not keeping a database, I don't keep records, but if someone wanted to start using them, they could. Yes, excellent. So BBIN in this segment. Next segment, the first ever BIP patent. All it does, it does not require royalties to me. It does not, unless you're from the government or provide services to the government like Tesla. And yeah, it can't be used by governments or government agents. It's only for good people.
It's the best way to have it.
Yeah, we got a comment from one of our listeners the other day on the site, from someone in Texas that heard us on the radio, that said, did you really just compare the TSA to the Nazis and then, like, said some bad things about us? And I'm like, yeah, it's a matter of degrees, man. They're just doing their jobs. Feel it up, Grandma. Worms.
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 You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
Yep, yep. So, I'm going to talk about how to fix the battery problem. So, basically, huge problem with the world right now. Basically, the world belongs to whoever can make a better battery right now, and Elon Musk is trying really hard. So, basically, lithium batteries are far better than all other batteries that are workable. And they've been around for a while, 25 years or something. But to make them safer, they had to go to lithium ion batteries, which are not as powerful and they don't hold as much as lithium, straight up lithium batteries. But lithium batteries had a problem, which was that, you know, lithium only batteries, not lithium only, I mean, there's a lithium, there's, you know, an electrolyte, there's a positive and negative anode and cathode in a battery, and then there's an electrolyte solution between them. But, you know, one of those things being lithium was a game changer in batteries. And those have been around for, I'm guessing, 25 or 30 years. I think they had them on, like, Super 8 video cameras back in the day, which was quite a long time ago. But those were dangerous because what happened is there's this buildup called dendrites between the anode and the cathode with time when you're using lithium, and it basically creates a short circuit between the positive and negative part of the battery inside the battery, shorts it out, catches it on fire, and lithium is extremely flammable. Lithium is one of those metals that's highly reactive that, like, you know, you toss a pellet of it into water and it starts boiling and burning. You ever seen that? Did your science teacher ever do that in school?
Not that I can recall.
Sure. Yeah, it's one of those, like, first day of, you know, ninth grade of high school science class tricks that science teachers like to do to show you the power of chemistry in a, you know, somewhat impressive but not terribly dangerous way. I mean, you have to wear, you know, eye and face protection to do it. But I think Walter White actually does it in Breaking Bad into his class, like the first day of a new incoming class. And so that's the reason, you know, that batteries often explode. And they've tried to find ways around that, including using less dendrite-producing lithium ion instead of just lithium metal. But those batteries are far less powerful. So the problem is making a battery that's small, light, and not going to blow up in your pants. You know, because people have these on them all the time now. We all have batteries. We all have lithium batteries, like, you know, against our groin and against our heart all the time. We're basically every holding, day. You know, and you know, my phone has a bunch of apps on it. I have to charge it every day at least. How about yours? And I don't even make that many calls. Yeah.
Yeah, I charge it throughout the day a lot of times.
Yeah, and they try to make one that you only have to charge twice a week, and it ends up blowing up, and they have to recall millions of them, like that Samsung. So here's the solution I thought of. So basically, it would involve adding a moving part to the battery, which kind of seems antithetical. Like, hey, they don't have any moving parts, why add one? But, like, use the lithium, the old school type, not the lithium ion, which has more power, holds a charge longer, needs recharging less, etc. It's better in every way, except it creates these dendrites, which explode. So basically, just put a knife made of ceramic between the anode and the cathode that would once a day or so, like, do one revolution and just turn in the paste inside the electrolyte solution and just cut any dendrites that are forming. And I really think that would work. And I imagine that this hasn't been, no one's come up with this because it's people with PhDs figuring it out instead of me, who has about a ninth grade good ninth grade or 10th grade understanding of science. And I'm just like, oh, you just have to put a rotating knife there to cut it every day. And, you know, the knives that they do surgery with now, a lot of them are ceramic, and it does not conduct electricity. You know, it's not going to break unless it's hit with a hammer, and it's extraordinarily sharp and never needs to be sharpened. So you just have a little ceramic knife in there that would, once a day or once a week, I don't know how fast dendrites form, but you do it just, you know, often enough that you would cut the dendrites. So there, you can. Elon Musk can send my check to, can send my Bitcoin to. The Bitcoin address is on the Freedom Fiends site. Now, contact me first if anyone wants to use that idea that does any work with the government. Or, you know, better yet, just hire me, put me on salary, and be like the guy that at Ford that used to sit around with his feet up on the table and came up with their best three ideas every year in the early days of Ford. Just looked out the window most of the time, but once in a while, that's me. Worms. Covered by a BIP, got no government license. This allows use and reuse by anyone except governments or government agents.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Speaking of dendrites, so hey, if there are any Freedom Fiends co-hosts listening, it's unlikely because it's past most of their bedtimes, but on nights they're not on. But if they are, drop me an email and come aboard, come on the show, because Braden, I don't know what happened to Braden. I'm a little worried about him because he's usually he's Mr. Responsibility, and I don't know what's up because he's not here. Yeah. He worms back, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I send out an email every time we have a show. I send out an email or the night before or the day of for hosts that are on to remind them and ask for any show notes. And he worms back, which is how you answer that email. So dendrites. There's also something in the brain called a dendrite. It's part of how a synapse works. It's part of a synapse, I believe. And I actually use that term in a book and in a movie trailer I did. I wrote this book. First book is called Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women. It was kind of like, I don't know, someone called it Bukowski on heroin, but it's, I like Bukowski, but it's different than that. But this first book I wrote in the year 2000. And about 2001, I think, I got together with some filmmakers and made a trailer for what I thought the movie should be. And it's a pretty cool little trailer. It's on YouTube. If you search Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women, it should be the first thing that comes up. And there's a scene in it where it's supposed to be some people in bed. It's supposed to be the main character and his girlfriend taking a 18-year-old girl's virginity on her birthday and shooting her up with crystal meth while doing it and watching her brain melt permanently. And there's a voiceover that says, "What, enjoying looking into her, deep into her eyes and watching, I forget what the other side of a dendrite is. Watching axons and dendrites permanently fusing together." And somebody did this animation in the footage panning into her eye of like sparks in her brain. It was really weird and creepy and cool, but it's all fantasy, man. Never did anything like that. So we're going to talk about a trip, a different kind of trip. A trip that James Weeks took to what I commonly accidentally call the Michigan Peace and Liberty Fest, but it's actually really the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. And this is what, the fourth year, third year of it, fifth year?
This should be the fifth year.
This year that just passed. It was the one that just finished yesterday.
Just finished yesterday.
Or today. I think today. People were still there today, weren't they?
Well, today was the last day of being there. Yeah. Today was the day we all packed up and rolled out.
And you, how far did you drive to get to it? Pretty close, huh?
Yeah, luckily it is, I live within a 2-hour driving distance from where the campground was.
But what was the furthest distance someone came for it?
There was someone that came from the Netherlands.
That's amazing.
Flew in from the Netherlands. There was also someone that drove in from Missouri.
Yeah, that's
so. That's a pretty decent drive. Okay. Yeah, that was a day long drive. So I'm not exactly sure. Like when it comes to travel, I'm not sure if the plane ride from the Netherlands is longer than the car ride from Missouri. But yeah, as far as mile wise, well, Netherlands came, wins. Ben Stone came.
It costs more to come from Netherlands. But Ben Stone came from Ohio, and that's two states away or one state away.
That's just right next. Yeah, it's next door. One state away. Well, it depends on how you. I mean, you could probably go through Indiana
too.
Yeah. You could probably go through Indiana to get into Michigan, depending on how what way he took to travel.
Yeah, depending on whether you're mapping your drive for gun freedom or weed freedom.
Yeah.
There should be an app. That's an app. The guns and weed. Because I made a movie called Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom, which you can watch by free by going to gunsandweed.com. I decided I'm just going to start pimping my projects more and more because, you know, I have a radio show and I'm like modest or something. I don't talk enough about them. So I'm going to say, "Oh, that reminds me," every segment of something I've done. So there's a movie that a lot of people have seen called Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom, and there should be an app, the Guns and Weed travel planning app or something like that. So you could you know, and you could overlay the two maps. It could be guns or weed or guns and weed. See which one's more problematic if you get caught. Just tell me more about the event.
It was an amazing event. It was so much fun. There's tons of people there. Had a lot of
was
great.
Was it bigger this year? There were like 100 last year, wasn't it?
It was probably about the same. It's cool. what was really great about how everyone camped this year is everyone seemed to spread out a little bit more, because we have a ton of room at this campground. Like, there's a ton of growth room. Like, we could have a lot of people show up to this event in the future. But everyone seemed to spread out a little bit more and find, like, a place. Everyone, I don't know. I like that, how it was a little bit more spread out with people camping.
Yeah, like at Pork Fest, people are like ass to elbow or butt to elbow. Sorry, it wasn't radio.
Yeah, it was really,
Pork Fest, right?
No, I have not made it out to Pork Fest.
I was there once.
I was going to, and then I've heard that it's lame now, and so
it's lame now. Yeah. It's getting shorter. It's getting more expensive. It's getting more corporate. It's got more rules. It's, you know, less fun from what I hear. But there's one cool thing about Pork Fest that no other place has, that no other Liberty event has, is that if you get hurt at Pork Fest and go to the hospital, if you're that badly hurt, the nearest hospital, which is like 6 miles away or something, is the hospital where G.G. Allen was born. How cool is that?
No, I mean,
almost worth getting hurt. But
well, that would... Yeah, you can't top that. Okay.
Yeah, if you get hurt at Michigan Peace and Liberty Fest, who was born at the hospital you go to? Gerald Ford, probably?
Probably Mitt Romney. I don't know.
Mitt Romney, yeah. Who's from Michigan? What famous goons are from Michigan?
Do you know? I don't know. Mitt Romney's the only one I can think of that's from
Michigan.
You're
too much of an anarchist to know any more than that.
Yeah,
because that'd be status to know which state. No, it wouldn't. You should know your enemy. But... And tell me more about the event. Who spoke? What happened? What was cool?
Well, we had a bunch of people come out and speak. We had a number of big names, but whatever on that.
I saw Tucker in a suit in the woods, and I thought it looked ridiculous,
That was the best part about it. Jeffrey Tucker came out wearing his suit, going through the woods in a suit.
In the woods. Yeah.
You know, he doesn't even put on, you know, a pair short of suit, sneakers or boots suit. To go on to in the woods. You know, he's wearing... He's wearing his dress. Yeah. He's wearing dress. Yeah. He's wearing dress shoes, and you know, a double-breasted suit in the middle of the woods. That guy just does not put on anything other than a suit.
Funny. I'm not impressed by that, but I thought it was kind of interesting. It's worth mentioning.
I think it's funny. I mean, the guy knows how to dress. There's something to it. He's committed to know how to dress.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever.
You know, I'm looking at a picture of the inside. I'm looking at the picture of the inside of a dendrite, and inside it, there's this kind of purple stuff that in the cross section looks almost exactly like it would look if you did a cross section of a head of purple cabbage. That's what your thoughts are composed of, is this thing in your brain. Looks like the head of a purple cabbage. Google it, people. I have the documents. All right. Tell me more about Michigan.
Well, we had a bunch of other people come out. You know, a bunch of people gave talks. We had, like, some people like Paul Gordon, Andrew Merrick gave talks. We had Dana Martin give talks. Paul's talk was really good.
Very cool. What was the topic?
It was kind of like work together with other. The main, to really summarize it up, it was a call for anarchist unity, which I really resonated well with me.
Yeah, yeah, you're a anarchist without adjectives, aren't you?
Yep,
that's the adjective that describes you.
Yep. Anarchist. Yep.
Without adjectives.
Just anarchist.
Yeah,
you just call me an anarchist.
Yeah.
Yeah, just one word, anarchist. That works. I don't need any tack-ons from that.
I want a dome over the commies to keep them separate from me. we've discussed that on here. You explained why that's probably not necessary, but I still want it.
Yeah, it's not really. It's not necessary.
I grew up in the '60s, man. I still have a little bit of that. You know,
yeah, got that residual.
All commies want to kill you. You hide in your basement because they're coming.
They're hiding in your. Oh no, you got commies under your bed. Yeah. Watch out.
back when the United States government not only told you how to build bomb shelters in your basement, they provided free blueprints to do so and told you what to stock, what food and water to stock it and medicine to stock it with. Whereas now, if you build that in your basement, you're probably going to get a knock on your door from the Department of Homeland Security asking you why.
No, probably.
I mean, definitely. I'm not saying, like, you know, back when things were good, all countries were always tyrannical, but I just find it ironic how the, like, the poles shift every 20 or 30 or 40 years, you know?
Yeah.
The enemies become, in a battlefield nowadays, it's like every week, you know, like America's arming people to fight their enemies this week who are like part of ISIS next week, or, you know, fighting ISIS, but still the enemy of America. I don't know. It's complicated.
Mm-hmm. That's how it's always going to work with that, though.
Yeah. We've always been,
you know, enemies. There was actually there was a talk about that. About, I can't remember who. Oh, I'm trying to remember now. I was really drunk throughout this entire event, so me remembering stuff is kind of hard sometimes with the speakers. But I can't remember who it was that was giving this talk. There was someone that was giving the talk about their kid reading 1984.
I was just gonna say we've always two enemies.
Yeah,
in the book.
Yeah. Michael, you're kind of down right now.
Yeah, which is
there we go.
There I am. Thank you. Which is the voice of God told me to turn it up. Yep. I moved my mic, so I turned it down. You know, actually I did that last week and didn't notice for like 3 minutes. There's an episode, or maybe 2 minutes, where like people are talking and in the background you can hear me going like but yeah. The telescreen in 1984 is, you know, constantly telling you, we've always been at war with East Asia, or East Asia are our friends. And, you know, if you ever say, wait, wasn't it the same thing last week? You get in trouble in 1984. Yep. We're there.
That's exactly
with a lot more freedom in some ways.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Yep. So James was talking about Michigan Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It's put on by
Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition. That's the confusion, Midwest and Michigan.
That's it. So we kind of buried the lead. We didn't mention that this is in the middle of the woods.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
The campground we were at was great. In the middle of the woods. Just, you know, way out there in the middle of the woods. Well, it's not way out there in the middle. It's like way out in the middle of the woods, but you can still run to the store in 15 minutes if you needed to pick something up.
Nice.
And forgot it.
It also has decent internet. Lou did a part of a show.
Decent or not.
Yeah. You were not?
I was not able to. It really depends on your carrier out there.
It was
sure
the first
Lou
night.
Has.
Maybe he was there. Maybe there's enough internets there for one person, but not 100.
Up at the farmhouse there, they do have Wi-Fi. So maybe he was up there when he was doing the show. I don't know if
he might have been parked there, but he sent me a picture of them doing the show. It was just him and Randy, and they were in Lou's mobile home.
Yeah, so he might have had it parked up by the Wi-Fi, or he it seemed like he did have decent Wi-Fi signal, because I seem to remember him using his phone as a hotspot, because we had a Skype call with Lynn Ulbricht during the fest. So
where was she? Was she at the fest or somewhere else?
No, she was Skype call. She came. Okay. She was attended the fest via Skype.
Cool. Yeah, I saw part of that.
So she was able to, talk to us over the Skype. And after we did a screening of the movie Dark Web, which is a really great movie. We did that, what was it, the first night or second night, something like that. Like I said in the last segment, I was pretty drunk throughout the whole thing, so a lot of it blurs together. but great time. We had a ton of great speakers out. Dana Martin gave a talk about unschooling. We had...
She was the worst mother in the world, she's been called, by nanny mothers, right?
Yeah, so yeah, that's what they... seems like the best mother in the world, really.
Yeah.
She says, I mean, she really supports her kids. You know, and that's the kind of thing that you need, is support as a kid. You know, yeah. She really does support her kids and value her kids. And,
but lets them, you know...
Do research with things. But the thing
lets
is,
them go,
is,
she lets them go talking the, about. She lets them go to the park across the street, though, you know, at least.
Yeah.
You know, she's not, she, yeah. Not a helicopter mom. She's the opposite.
No, no, but you know, that's the thing is that, you know, she's talking about, like, the things her kids want to do, and she's like guiding them to do the research on it. Like, they'll come to her and want this crazy thing, and then they'll research it together and then decide.
Yeah,
you know, like, it's not like she's you know, oh, you want to go get a tattoo, you know, okay, let's go do that right now, you know. It's like, okay, let's go research.
She's not like that. Oh, so yeah. she'd sit down with her kid and read a bunch research before you do
it,
that.
Research it together with her kid, so her kids are fully. She won't let her. She wants, you know, fully informed decisions being made and stuff like that. But she does let her kids make decisions. You know, but she informed. She wants them to be informed. You know, I think that's great. Great way to do things. But, you know, of course, the nanny moms, helicopter moms are going to have a fit about that. They're, oh, my God, she lets her kids make decisions? You can't have that.
Yep.
But, you know, we had... it was just great. It was a great time. We had people there, a lot of vendors and stuff like that. If people needed food, there was people there cooking food. If you were hungry, I've done since the past three fests, I brought a cooler of food for people who didn't really think enough, you know.
Or didn't have enough money. You know, I think Nick barely made it. Nick was there, but, like, didn't he not have enough for food or something?
Well, there, even if you didn't have a deal, there's the mutual aid cooler is what we call it, where, you know, people bring in, people throw food in there. It's mainly hot dogs. But, you know, if you're hungry, you can always go grab a hot dog out of the mutual aid cooler. And so everyone was well fed, even if you couldn't afford to bring food. It was a great time.
Excellent.
Oh, yeah. It's a blast. I can't wait till next year. I'm like already excited for next year.
I'm envious.
Next year's gonna be a blast.
Woohoo!
This year was great. I'm like wishing I was still there. It should be forever. that's just how life.
Well, if there was a Liberty Fest constantly, it could be like Deadheads. You could just travel the country at whatever Liberty Fest was always there.
Yeah, there you go. One every weekend you could do.
Lip Hair could be on the road.
That needs to happen.
Without the music. Or other music. Probably bad music.
Yeah.
I love the Freedom Fiends. But in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best-ofs of each episode.
20-minute best-ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow. I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
Yep. Are you going to be doing the intro here?
Nope, I'll do the intro here.
All right. Yeah, that works.
Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Peace Plaza on the artificial satellite of Pair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Please insert the purple cortex, the purple wire in your cortex now.
Yep, I did.
It's covered
I did
by the Bipcot no government license. This allows use and reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. Learn more at bipcot.org.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It's true, yep. Yeah. So, somebody broke into my backyard today and climbed a fence. What is what would Stirner do? WWSD.
What would Stirner do? Which party would Stirner be?
Well, I'm not the government, and he's not the one breaking in. So, if it were his property, and someone else jumped his fence,
well, he would defend it with his might. To yep. make it his property. It wouldn't be his property if he didn't defend it.
Right. I kind of did that. It was children retrieving a ball, and I did not shoot them. But I did call their guardian and said, hey. Because this happens like every 2 or 3 weeks that the ball ends up in my backyard, and they come and, mm-hmm. you know, they're all about 6 and 8 and 9. There's a little passel of them, and they knock on the door, and, Mister, our ball went in your yard. Can we get it? And sometimes they wake me up, and I say, mm-hmm. I'll get it when I wake up. And sometimes I'm awake and not terribly busy, and I'm like, you know, I could use stretching my legs. And I walk out there and get it and toss it back over. And today I was like, I'm asleep. I was really deep in sleep. And I was like, I'm asleep. I'll get it when I wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Shut the door abruptly. I didn't really slam it, but I just didn't wait for an answer and just shut it. Set it through the door, through mm-hmm. the, you know, outside door, the glass part. So I wake up about 2 hours later. This is about 1 p.m. I wake up about 3 p.m. and go out. I'm like, okay, you know, I had my coffee, checked my email, did a few other things. So about, you know, 3:25, 3:30, I go out there to toss it back over, and it's not there. And mm-hmm. I heard them playing in the backyard, and I yelled over the fence to them, hey, your ball's not back here. What happened? And silence. And I said, did you guys climb over the fence and get your ball? And silence. And I called their grandpa that they live with, because, you know, like many Americans, their dad's in jail. So mm-hmm. so I called the grandpa, who's the guardian, who's a really nice guy. I like him. We're kind of buddies, and he's a good neighbor, you know, and he's mm-hmm. been tasked with these kids and is doing a good job with them. And I called him up, and I told him, and I said, hey, I think your kids climbed into my yard, because they, you know, I explained to him what happened, and he said, well, I will deal with them sternly. And he was almost laughing, but not laughing. And I was like, I almost said, like, don't be stern with them. But I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to tell this guy how to parent, and I don't want the kids in my yard, and maybe sternly will get it done, whatever his impression of sternly is. So, you know, about 90 seconds after I got, no, probably about 3 minutes after I got off the phone with him, there's a knock at my door, and I went out there, and they were on my porch saying, I'm sorry, we won't do it again.
Yep.
Yep. So part of the stern punishment was go apologize. And I really appreciated that. And like, I can't think of a better outcome for all of that, for all parties involved, with someone trespassing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, you gotta put your foot down with kids early with climbing over a fence. That's a really bad precedent to allow. And if I hadn't defended it with my verbal might, you know, I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's kind of dangerous for anybody doing that if they get into the habit of doing it, and if they did it at night, you know, at night. I wouldn't say I'd shoot them, but I'd say the rules are different at night, maybe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, in Texas is the only place in America where it's legal to shoot someone to defend your property, only your property, when there's no physical threat to your body. And it's only at night. So basically, you know, if someone's spray painting on the side of your barn at night, you're allowed to shoot them in Texas.
Yeah.
Yep.
Why only at night, though?
I don't know. Because at night, I would assume because at night you can't see, you know, I guess threats are scarier and harder to identify, and it's harder to tell whether someone's armed or not, maybe.
Maybe.
Because it's Texas, and they make up their own rules, but I kind of like the rule. I kind of like it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it just seems, that seems kind of silly to me that it would only be at night.
It seems biblical to me that it would only be at night somehow. Which makes it make sense in Texas. Doesn't it seem like, you know, there's something in the Bible about, like, you know, if a man scares your cattle at night,
at night.
Just, yeah, it just seems biblical, man. I don't know. It really does. Yep.
Yeah, I guess it could, you guys could see that, but it just seems silly at night. That night thing just, that's going to get me.
Well, you don't own property in Texas, so, or do you?
No, I don't. I don't own property in Texas, so, yeah. I don't know. Maybe it makes sense if you own property in Texas.
Yeah. So what you thinking, man?
Oh, I'm thinking about this story that you sent me earlier today.
Which one?
About the FBI investing a group of Dungeons and Dragons players.
I think you should read some of that and tell me what you think of that. That is really funny. And this is back in the 70s, and this is the FBI who, remember, this is the Unabomber case, and they put, the FBI likes to brag about how they finally solved the Unabomber case, and they put more man hours over more years to stop this guy who was sending bombs to universities and airports. Was it UNA? Was UN University and Airport? I think is what it stood for, or airlines. It was like airline executives. He basically was an environmental terrorist, and he tried to damage with mail bombs people who he felt contributed to the destruction of society. And he lived in the woods in a shack that was, I don't know, something like 20 by 10 feet, about the size of a jail cell, in the middle of deep, 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 deep woods in Montana, one state north of here where I'm in Wyoming, even more rural than most of Wyoming. And He was not a stupid guy. He was a Ted Kaczynski was a advanced mathematics PhD holder. I think he had a couple PhDs, and he was a teacher where at Berkeley, was it, or Stanford? Mm-hmm. One of those places. Mm-hmm. He went to, you know, he was a smart guy, but he really didn't like pollution, and he thought the solution was blowing things up. And he got away with it for years and years and years and years and years. And part of why he got away with it was he did it infrequently, and he handmade a lot of the parts. Like, even the boxes were made from wood, you know, because he was old school. You know, he made everything as much as he could. And, you know, some people died, some people got hurt, and, you know, more often than not, it was the secretary that got hurt, not the intended target. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they finally caught him, and the FBI loves to brag about how they stopped this guy with more manpower than they'd ever used before. They didn't solve this case. I mean, they went and put the cuffs on him, but do you know how this case was solved? Do you remember?
No.
Ted Kaczynski's brother recognized the writing and called the FBI. He's like, I think that's my brother. Because he, you know, he wrote this thing. It's commonly called the Unabomber Manifesto, but it was actually called something else, like, I don't know, of the Industrial Revolution or something. And
something like that, yeah.
He said he would stop bombing people if they published it in the New York Times and the LA Times. And, mm-hmm. you know, the papers, like, I think one of the papers finally published it because they felt it was in the public interest and might help catch him. And, you know, I think the FBI told him not to. You don't negotiate with terrorists, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it was published, and it was long. It was about 40 pages, I think. And
mm-hmm.
And it's commonly criticized of, like, it's rambling and contains many typos. Well, you try writing a 40-page treatise on a manual typewriter by candlelight in the middle of the woods. I'll bet it's going to have some typos. I've actually read it, and it, I mean, I do not agree with his methodology, but some of what he says, like, he makes a good argument. Like, it would be a good argument on a debate team, even though I don't agree with it.
I've read it too, and I agree with that. That if him bombing people really takes away from his point, though.
Yeah,
like if he would have just published that without all the other crazy stuff, it would have been a lot better, and probably would have had a lot more positive impact.
It might not still be read, though.
But it might not.
He guaranteed it would still be read. Oh, back off the mic about a half inch to get a lot of.
He guaranteed it'd be read, though.
His brother turned him in because there was a really weird, unique phrase in it that, like, his brother had used. He heard the brother Kaczynski had heard Ted Kaczynski use in something he wrote previously. You know, it was like some three-letter word. Kind of how the, like, there's people who think that that Bitcoin was invented by some particular person because there's some particular person who, not long before Bitcoin was released, filed a patent on some cryptography system and used the unique phrase cryptologically impractical to reverse, something like that. And it was, you know, like the same phrase is used in the Bitcoin white paper. So a lot of people think it's the same person, but it was kind of the same thing. And, you know, they had a tip line, the FBI had a tip line, and they got thousands of tips. I mean, they got people turning in their neighbors they had a beef with. They got people turning in people who actually had an interest in bombs. They had people turning in people who had an interest, you know, who were extreme about environmentalism. But this guy was so off the grid. And I kind of think that being off this grid wouldn't be this possible at this point. But it's weird, though, that this guy was a known person. You know, like, he was a teacher at a university, and he was in university catalogs, and he was probably on the early internet because, you know, those universities were the first things on the internet. He probably had an email address, I'll bet you, before most of us heard of email. But yeah, his brother turned him in. The FBI didn't solve it at all. All they did was showed up and put cuffs on him and said, "We win. Look at what we did." You know,
we solved the case.
Yeah. So while they were not solving the case, we're going to talk when we get back about that they were chasing down leads of people who invented Dungeons and Dragons as possible suspects. We'll be back.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hi there, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Purse.io is a great website where you can spend Bitcoin on Amazon or trade Amazon gift cards for Bitcoin. I use Purse myself and I love it. You can also get discounts on Amazon. You can get 5% right this minute, or if you place your order and wait a day or so, you can name your discount and get 10%, 20%, even up to 33% off. You can try Purse right now and get 0.01 Bitcoin free after you complete your first order over $50. And if you go through the Freedom Fiends link, Purse will also send 0.01 Bitcoin to the Freedom Fiends. Help yourself to some agorism and help Liberty Media while you're at it. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Purse link, even if you've used Purse before. Or enter the referral code FIENDS when you sign up at purse.io. That's FIENDS. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra. Do it!
About this FBI file here. We got FBI investigating Dungeons and Dragons as part of the Unabomber's case.
We got to say that during the break, we were talking about how they mention in here that, what did they say? How they describe?
Yeah, they described players. The war gamers. Here's a quote from the thing: "War gamers are generally extremely intelligent individuals. Often they live frugally to support the cost of the war gaming hobby." censored. It's got a redacted. Further advised that the typical wargaming enthusiast is overweight and not neat in appearance.
And I asked you if you had ever played Dungeons and Dragons, and what did you say?
I do. I do play Dungeons
and Dragons. You still play
Dungeons? Yeah, I still play Dungeons and Dragons.
I'm overweight and not terribly neat in appearance, but I... it never, I don't know, I was never a fan of math, and it seems kind of mathy to me, and it seems like cool. Not a lot of girls played it.
No, like there's some girls that play. I play with the girl. That
Are they overweight and not neat in appearance in general?
The exact opposite of that, actually.
Wow. So they look like models.
Yeah, pretty much.
They're hanging out in someone's basement.
Yeah, she's going to listen to this and tell watch. But yeah, she's definitely not overweight and definitely not neat in appearance. She's the opposite of that.
So she's, skinny and disheveled or skinny and well put together?
Very well put together.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Hmm. So there, not everybody who plays D&D is overweight and not neat appearance, but probably in the 70s when this, or whenever, when this was going on in the 90s.
The couple, I knew a couple who played D&D, actually. I did know a woman who played it. It was a guy that I liked that went to my boarding school and dropped out. He dropped out, met this girl, and they started following the Grateful Dead, and I would say they were probably not neat in appearance. And he came back and visited the school one time and brought us some LSD. So, it's kind of like how every hero in every journey, in every story, and including in Dungeons and Dragons, the hero is someone who goes into a foreign land and comes back with something that helps all humanity. And he left the school, went to the Grateful Dead, and came back with LSD for the children. Think of the children. I was 15.
Think of the children.
Don't try this at home. Wait, where's the app? Okay. Yep. I'll find it. You talk more about this article.
Yeah, what's funny about this is that, they go into the history of D&D a little bit. And it's ridiculous to me that they spent time
for entertainment purposes only.
There we go. Okay, go ahead.
They spent time investigating people who played this game as possible. I mean,
what was the connection? Did someone give them a tip, or what? Why'd they think there was a reason?
That's the thing, is I'm not really seeing anything.
What's the connection
for why?
Well, I mean, I guess the Unabomber was into math, and I think you need to do some kind of mathematical pattern-related
thing. But, I mean, we're talking about, basic math here with D&D. I mean,
I'm not just talking about, don't mean just counting, the 23-and-a-half-sided die or whatever. I'm talking about there's kind of a math component to it, even if you're not actually scribbling down numbers, I think. It seems kind of mathy to me. Is that correct? Anything with strategy is kind of mathy in your head.
Basic addition and subtraction, multiplication.
In a more general way. I mean in like a bigger way, like not actual numbers, but strategy is using the part of your brain that does math, I think, is what I'm saying. Thinking several moves ahead or thinking what your opponent might do is kind of math-like thinking.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess you could say that, but I don't know. As far as actual math,
yeah, I'm not talking about that.
Yeah, it's not really that mathy, but... Yeah, it's something that I guess they're worried about, they think that overweight, not needing appearance, intelligent people bomb people, apparently, according to the FBI.
Well, I think a lot of people probably think that people who bomb people would probably be shut-ins that aren't, socially apt. And that's actually true, and that's actually an FBI profile that's common with people who bomb, and... It's often true, and it certainly was true with Ted Kaczynski. He hated people. He lived in the woods alone because he couldn't stand people.
Yeah,
but there's a bomber, I mean, they start looking for a middle-aged white male because historically, in the 20th century in America, something 80-90% of bombers have been that. Except in the 60s, there were some younger hippies that did it, but probably some black hippies that did it. But yeah, that's probably. It's so weird though, D&D, man. Well, people destroy things in D&D. It was before video games were popular, too. They probably thought, if they're destroying... Today,
if it was today, they'd be investigating video gamers.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Investigate people playing Call of Duty.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you tired of stinky socialists trying to take over America?
And are you also tired of theorists talking about the free market as a cure-all for every problem with no firsthand experience of how the market actually works?
Well, the Truth, Justice, American Way app gives you wall-to-wall shows by hosts who not only understand the market, but tell you how they make money in a variety of patriotic endeavors.
The Truth, Justice, American Way app for Android is 24/7 streaming audio content on the topics of finance, liberty, self-defense, and technology.
All the hosts are all American Americans from all over America.
And the app is made in Wyoming, the cowboy state.
Because you should buy American, even with free Android apps.
Truth, Justice, American Way. Useful information, compelling personalities, and superior American audio quality.
Go on the Google Play Store or the Amazon App Store and search Truth, Justice, American Way.
God bless each and every one of you, and God bless America.
So, James Weeks, the naked guy from C-SPAN. Show me on the doll where the government touched you.
Well, we got...
touched Russia.
Touched Russia. Well,
Russian people.
Russia touched Telegram app.
Yeah,
Russia's upping its pressure on Telegram.
What is the Telegram app?
Telegram.
To most people listening on radio, Telegram is how you communicated when we were young to people on radio.
Telegram is a new way to communicate.
Yeah, it's not the dots and dashes that it used to be. It's
actual. You know, people are able to communicate apparently somewhat anonymously through somewhat encrypted means or something like that. I'm not sure what they're encrypted.
I've used it
on Telegram. I know they have like the self-deleting stuff on Telegram, and I'm not quite sure how their encryption works with Telegram though.
Well, apparently it works well enough that governments are horrified by it. That's kind of my measure of if something works.
Because I don't think they send it over open text, but I don't think it's very encrypted.
It's absolutely not open text. It is encrypted, but there's issues with it. And the biggest issue with any encryption app is that you're using it on a phone that has 20 or 30 other apps that may have security holes in them. So, and it's using them on an Android system, which there was a leak of government information a while back that said that I think it wasn't a leak of CIA stuff or was it NSA stuff that had said that Telegram was not secure, but it was basically if it was running on a non-updated version of Android or iPhone. And
well, yeah, that was like
update.
A bunch of stuff came up and said that, you know, that they have backdoors into. But the thing was that it was their back doors required a lot of work, and it wasn't something they could just do. You know,
it's not something they could do widely.
Nothing secure if they gain access to the device itself. That's pretty much what the sum of that was.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. It's like, it doesn't matter. And that's how they do most spying now is not, if you're using encryption, you know, they try to get a microphone into the room and hear what you're saying before it's encrypted, or they try to find a way to, you know, read the text or hear the audio talking on the machine, on the device before it's encrypted. Because once it's encrypted, encryption is, you know, the encryption levels that are used in these things are still not breakable even by governments. And when they get quantum computers, they may be breakable, but it'll be very easy for these companies to just up the, you know, the bits of the encryption to where it would take a whole nother level of quantum computers to break it. And the thing is, too, like, yeah, maybe they could break stuff with quantum computers, you know, like 256-bit encryption or 512-bit encryption or 128-bit encryption. And the thing is, like, doubling the encryption from, 512-bit to 128-bit, 1,028-bit doesn't double the strength of the encryption. It's galaxies of levels of magnitude.
Exponentially more.
Yeah, and it's nominal. It's a nominal problem for the people who make these apps to update that. I mean, they don't do it now because it would make things run slower on the machines they're on now. But you know,
you need faster devices. Right.
But in
faster,
a few years, you know, you'll have faster devices. I mean, that's the thing too. Like the thing is too. Like even if they can break them, theoretically, can break stuff with nanocomputers. It would take billions of dollars of quantum computers to break, you know, one encrypted email, and it would take weeks, you know, whereas now it would take centuries of all the computers in the world to break it. So,
right,
you know, quantum computers are not going to be the, oh my God, all of a sudden encryption doesn't work. It's going to be like, yeah, the government might be able to, you know, undo one email if they put all their power to it for a couple of weeks. It's not
The only thing the quantum computers would really help with, though, is running actual password list attacks through it.
Yeah.
Try and get in there.
Yep.
Because it wouldn't be able to brute force it any better, really.
Yeah.
Because it just up the encryption level. Like you said, make it orders of magnitude worse. You know, harder for them to do it. But they would be able to do password attacks faster, though. That's the only thing. So you would need to have the complexity of your encryption passwords much better.
Yep. And, you know, I'll put in a little word here for this. A long password that's a bunch of unguessable words is a lot harder to break than a short password that looks like gobbledygook, you know, and which is kind of unfortunate because a lot of systems, especially corporate intranets, you know, they do ridiculous things like they make you have a letter and a number and, you know, an underscore and a capital letter and a small letter. And it has to be between 8 and 12 letters, you know, whereas you're going to do a lot better if you make a phrase like, James Weeks is bugging me with his incessant orgasms while he's talking. I wish they'd stop. Like, that is memorable. That is memorable. It would take, you know, centuries longer to crack than gobbledygook that's 8 to 12 letters long with weird.
You'd never crack that. That is not going to be in someone's password list.
Yeah.
You'd never crack that. that's just not going to be there.
Yeah, I mean,
randomly generated.
Look at the fact that you can back up a Bitcoin address, not just the password for the address, but the whole address with 12 words now that are very common words. And it's a list of, like, it's not every word that's used for those addresses. I think it's like 100 or 200 words, maybe. Maybe less, 72 maybe, sounds right. Yeah. But even so, you know, you could sit there all day just typing in 12 words from those lists and you'd never, you know, in a million lifetimes you might crack one Bitcoin address, but it's unlikely.
Yeah.
So my problem with things like Telegram, which I don't use anymore, because Telegram, my main problem with it is it's not encrypted by default, and the encryption only works on the phone. And I tend to write, you know, if I'm writing something encrypted, it tends to be longer than I want to type with my thumbs, so I want it to work on a desktop computer. The desktop Telegram is not encrypted, and I didn't know this, and I think it's really creepy
Telegram doesn't. Desktop Telegram is not encrypted?
I mean, there are millions of people sending unencrypted messages they think are encrypted. That's really creepy. And the other thing is, I use, what's the other one? What's the other common internet password protected, encrypted app that's for phone calls too? Does Telegram do phone calls now? I don't know if they do.
I'm not sure if they do or not.
Yeah, there's another one.
Signal. Signal's awesome.
Yep. We used Signal that time. That, you know, they changed that. We did that. They used to have the two-word confirmation, and we thought they were great band names, and we were reading them one day.
Oh, it's a great band name generator.
But, like, two days after that, they got rid of that, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
But, well, why would you get rid of that? Because that's a really easy way to tell, you know, maybe it was false security, and they realized, so they got rid of it. But, see, I think there's a lot of false security going on, because if you really want to, I used PGP email a while back for, you know, like a decade ago, and it's been around for longer than that. But it's hard to use, and not a lot of people use it. So
they have a great app for it on Android, AGP. It makes it really easy. Yeah, cool. It makes it really easy to use, and it integrates with another Android app for email with K9 Mail. So it integrates right with K9 Mail to where you don't even have to leave the mail. Huh. It's really one bush, boom,
well,
you're done.
There was a plugin like that for desktop for Thunderbird Mail, which I used for a long time. But, first of all, if you're going to really be serious about encryption, you should be doing it on a system that doesn't have any other apps on it. Like, you should buy a burner phone and only use it to run Telegram or Signal or whatever you're using. The other thing is, a problem I have with all of these is that Telegram and Signal do have an option for auto-deleting messages, but it doesn't always work. And the Signal one has to be...
Ours seems to work.
The Signal one has to be both parties have to set it to, deleting in one day or 1 minute or whatever. Yeah, but I don't know. I've still got some. They're months old conversations sitting. They're nothing. I mean, I had deleted them manually, but that should be automatic. I think there shouldn't be a way to not have it deleted, really. I mean, why are people sending stuff encrypted that they are keeping copies of? Because then if someone gets your phone and gets into it, they have it. Now, you would say, I think it should be the other way around. I think the default should be it automatically deletes everything and you have to set it to not.
Well, the nice thing about Signal, though, is because you're having the device on you should have your phone anyway encrypted, right? So you have Signal on an encrypted phone, and then on top of it being on an encrypted phone, Signal itself will locally encrypt it. And so you have to put in, you can have it set up to where you have to put in, your encryption password to even open up the Signal app to decrypt it. Yeah. And so you can have that actually. So even if someone gained access to your phone and somehow got through your encryption on your phone, they would still, again, now have to get through the encryption, the local encryption on Signal to get into those messages too. So that's why I don't really think it's that big of a deal that they don't auto delete, because they'll, you have two layers. You should have two layers.
I think it's a huge deal because not everyone you're talking to has those two layers of encryption.
They should.
They don't. Most don't.
If you have it auto deleted too, you're really set. No one's getting your stuff. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Yep. But my other even bigger problem with all these encryption programs, and if someone solved this problem, it would be the app I used and would use. Make an app that you don't have to confirm tying to your phone number. I mean, the answer obviously is using a burner phone, but it's actually pretty hard to get a burner phone that's not really tied to you, traceable to you in some way if they really want to do some footwork, If you buy it in a store, there's video of you buying it in the store, even if you pay with cash. If you send someone else in, they can find him and beat him with a rubber hose and he can give a description of you. I don't know. It's just, I don't see any
place that doesn't have security cameras.
I don't see any reason to tie it to a phone. It's a ridiculous idea. Like my favorite security method that I use was called Pigeon. And you can just make up an address that's gobbledygook, and that's your address. It's not tieable to you in any way. Because here's the thing. With tying it to your phone number, the man, being the government, can at least figure out that you're using encryption. They may not easily be able to see it, but I think more and more... First of all, I think more and more with more technologies coming out that just bypass government and say, I think what's going to happen is twofold. One is they're going to prosecute more people really, really hard and watch people more. And the other thing is they're going to be able to do less and less. But I don't think you want them knowing you're using encryption. We'll be back to talk about Russia finally when we get back from this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateurs, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Oh, yeah.
Walsh is not really liking this Telegram app, though. Even if we got complaints with, you know, we got complaints with the encryption. Russia also has complaints.
Oh, I have no complaint. I have no complaints with the encryption. I have complaints with the implementation of the encryption. Well, the usability.
Yeah. That's all up to users, though, to make sure that they're implementing.
Really not, though, because you still have to use a phone number and.
Yeah.
Anyway, I digress. I stated I'm only repeating myself at this point. So tell me what the article says.
Well, Russia is saying that terrorists have used the Telegram messaging app to carry out a suicide bombing on Russian soil. So they're putting pressures on the apps, accusing it of breaking data laws, whatever those Russian data laws are. Russia's communications director said that it's going to block Telegram unless it hands over information needed to put the app on the official government list of information distributors.
Oh, gee.
Telegram has been refusing to comply, saying it would undermine the privacy of its more than 6 million Russian users. Once on that list, it would have to store information about
Russian servers. You know what comply means is hand over their phone numbers.
Yeah, that's what it is.
You know, in their IP addresses.
Once on the list, it would store the information on its users on Russian servers and hand over user information to authorities on request. So what they're wanting is they're wanting Telegram to hand over who the users are, basically. The FSB, the successor of the Russian, the Soviet era KGB, weighed in to stand off on Monday, releasing the statement which said that Telegram is, quote, terrorists with the opportunity to create secret chat rooms with a high degree of encryption. So that's what they're saying about, end quote there. That's what they're saying about the Telegram app. It said that a suicide bomber blew himself up on the St. Petersburg Metro April 3rd, killing 15 people, and had used the Telegram to plan with his accomplices, and that Telegram had become the most widely used app of its kind by terrorist operations inside Russia. This is just like when they were saying that they... PlayStation Network. They were doing the same thing with the PlayStation Network, saying people were planning it over video games. they always like to say that. How do they know? You know, yeah. how do they really know? They don't know. They're just saying that they use this stuff, but they don't know.
They don't know. They want to ban something.
They do. Well, they want to catalog
everyone in the competitor. They might own stock in the competitor of that gamer, that game company.
Yeah, maybe the FBI owns stock in Microsoft.
Wow.
Oh, where's the allegedly button? I need to pull that up.
No.
it's taking too long. Uh-oh. This is too long before the allegedly.
Uh-oh. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
There we go.
Yeah.
Well, the Telegram's founder said the app had blocked thousands of terrorism-related channels, and that if Russia banned it, terrorists would just switch to a competing service, which is true.
It's true.
You know, you can't, but even then, you know, you can't, they could just go to use just regular PGP over email.
This isn't really about stopping terror. This is about keeping the slaves from talking to each other. Governments hate that. Governments used to control everything we read, pretty much, and everything we saw, definitely saw on TV, and everything on the radio. And I don't know, man, the cat's out of the bag, the cow's out of the barn. You can't put it all back. It's impossible.
But one thing I'd like to say, we'll skip ahead in the article a little bit, because it's pretty much all similar to that. But the founder of... Telegram, Pavel Durov, said,
Russian? Sounds Russian.
Sounds like it could be. If you want to defeat terrorism by blocking stuff, you'll have to block the internet. That's a quote by him. I think that sums it up just about right.
And they'd like to, but if they block the internet, commerce would fail now and there'd be no tax money to steal.
Exactly. A lot of things would shut down without the internet. They can't block the internet.
Yep.
So they'll never be able to do this.
Yep.
You know, they're not going to be able to make the internet not secure, no matter how hard they try. There will always be people there to rectify that situation and make an encrypted app. I mean, they tried to block PGP. And what happened? They just published because
as a T-shirt.
Published it in a book. Published in the source code.
Oh, the T-shirt was the there's a key for undoing the DES, I think it was called. There was a thing they put on DVDs to keep them from being copied. Someone broke it, and they said that some court said that publishing it was against the law, so they put it on a T-shirt and said it was art. Wrong. Yeah? Why?
What time is it now?
57:56. Yeah. I think we're out, and we missed it. Board up.
WTMV, the artisanal Freedom Fiends radio app, allows you.